Welcome to Maximum Security Democracy Volume 6. I'm George Bloom, and I got a pretty good show planned for you today. We're going to talk a little bit about the Bush administration's continued assault on our civil rights. We're going to talk a little bit about the drug companies and their fear of the Democratic Congress. They've already started what looks like a new campaign to scare users of prescription drugs into believing that if Congress moves on trying to cap some of the pricing on these drugs, that we're going to suffer. And I'm going to tell you how you can help fund the evangelical minister Benny Hinn's new private jet. Yes, I know you're just itching to contribute to his luxury jet. I'm going to tell you how. The site for this podcast is georgebloom.podomatic.com, and I also encourage you to go to my blog where I have some of these articles posted that I comment on, and that site is maximumsecuritydemocracy.blogspot.com. It's a pretty unbelievable story that's just been getting out in the newspapers. The New York Times reported on it, Chicago Tribune reported on it, as well as others. But it's about, you've heard in the past foreigners being detained by the U.S. government, brought to secret camps, being tortured. Well, you knew it was only a matter of time before it was going to happen to a U.S. citizen, and it has. Donald Vance is now suing the U.S. government over being detained and tortured and held without due process. He was, at the time, working for a company called SGS, Shield Group Security, which was in Iraq, and he was actually at the time working with the FBI to expose some of the corruption and the dealings that SGS had with the local sheiks. Well, SGS went in and confiscated their common access cards, which is what they would use to get from red zone areas to the green zone where the U.S. embassy is located. Essentially, that was cutting them off from getting to the U.S. embassy. So after SGS did that, Vance and there's another man, Ertel, they felt that they were, sitting ducks and that they were going to, be killed because they were essentially cut off. But eventually the U.S. military brought them to the embassy. But it was from the embassy that they were taken, handcuffed, blindfolded to Camp Prosperity, which is a military base in the Green Zone. And that's where they were threatened with violence. And then they were taken to Camp Cropper, where they spent the rest of the time that they were imprisoned and tortured. And they were denied medical care. And they were also denied due process. So eventually, they were released and dropped off at the airport in Iraq, and without any kind of apology. Now Vance is back in the United States, and he's filed suit against the U.S. government. So, when you have such low standards of, of human rights and liberties, and you start with foreigners, you start to get into a habit where you can treat anybody like that, including U.S. citizens. And that's the problem with all this that's been going on, denying all these people due process and holding them, in the name of terrorism, in a war on terrorism that's going to go on indefinitely. So technically, you could actually hold somebody indefinitely in the name of terrorism because it's a war that 3,000 years from now, we're still going to be fighting this war on terrorism. It's a war that's never going to end. So, in my opinion, it was only a matter of time before the government started doing this to U.S. citizens, and it looks like that due process is something that can be denied now to U.S. citizens. We'll be right back. think the drug companies are starting to fear a Democratic Congress. They seem to be disseminating a scare campaign now to make people believe that if the government puts in caps on the pricing for drugs, that they will invest less in research and development, and we won't develop the drugs of the future that we really need. Well, that's completely bogus. You know, the drug business is a very lucrative business, and they are raping the American people with their prices. You know, they're selling us at a top dollar value, and they're selling to Canada at a lower value, and selling around the world at lower prices, even though some of the drugs have received subsidies from the United States government to develop. So, and on top of that, I don't buy that argument that they're going to invest less money in research and development if they have to, if they put some caps on some of these prices. I mean, if they sit back and let other countries and other drug companies step in and develop the drugs, they're going to be left out of the game completely. So it's all about developing new drugs. And, you know, maybe they'll cut back a little bit on some of the research and development, but I don't really buy it that it's going to severely impact and cripple their development of new drugs. I don't buy it at all. It's too lucrative, too much money, too many opportunities to hit it big as far as developing new drugs goes. And, you know, the other argument is, even if they were to as it stands, a lot of people are cash-strapped to buy the drugs, and insurance companies are not able to pay for the drugs. So by putting some caps, you actually could increase the health of the population of the United States, because more people are actually going to be able to afford to buy the drugs that they need. If these prices keep going up and up and up, you're going to have less and less people involved and able to pay for these drugs. Right as it stands now, is a lot of, you know, old ladies on Social Security who got to make a choice between the drugs that are going to save their life and eating. And what kind of a choice is that to put someone in that position? So, you know, I don't buy that argument at all. Something has got to be done to slow down and to, you know, limit the pricing on some of these drugs, you know, for the benefit of the American people. At least get it in line with what they're selling these drugs to other, the prices that they're selling these drugs to other countries. I think we at least deserve that, if not better, because it developed right here. We ought to be getting better prices than, say, what Canada's getting, because they're exporting to Canada. It makes no sense whatsoever. If they can afford to let these drugs go to Canada for that price, you can bet they can let them go here. And it's not the job of the people of the United States to subsidize these countries to pick up the slack or whatever so that these new drugs can be developed. I mean, everybody should be getting a fair deal. And it's the American people who are not getting a fair deal here. You hear every once in a while some evangelical leader is caught in a scandal. It seems to happen, you know, two or three times a year now, which is, you know, it's unbelievable to me that people are emptying their coffers into these people's pockets. But anyways, this particular story isn't really a scandal, but I thought it was pretty funny. Benny Hinn, he has his own ministry, very popular around the world. He's out there trying to spread the word, and he wants you to donate, but not to help some starving child in Africa. No, not to help start up a homeless shelter in a major city. No, that's not what he wants you to donate to. He wants you to make a donation to his private jet so that he can fly around the world in luxury to bring his mission to people around the world. Yes, indeed. If you go to my blog, I got the link there so you can donate and help this guy out. I mean, you know, flying in a plane, coach class, you know, we can't have that, you know. We got to live the high life and have our own private jet so that we can go in luxury to these places so we can collect money. I think that's unbelievable. And he says he's a follower of Christ, huh? I don't think Christ would be flying first in a first-class private jet anywhere. Last time I checked, he walked. But anyways, you know, everybody should donate and help spread the message here. Oh, guess what he's naming his private jet? Dove One. Isn't that sweet? Recently, President Bush signed into law the Postal Reform Act, which was sponsored by Senator Susan Collins of Maine, which is all fine and good. You know, the Postal Reform Act is supposed to restructure some things in the post office and ensure that the rates are kept low and on along that line. But Bush attached a signing statement which led to some confusion about the federal government possibly having a right to search people's mail, people's sealed domestic mail. And that, I think that really upset Susan Collins. Well, kudos to her, because she proposed a resolution to clarify that the federal government does not have the authority to open domestic, sealed domestic mail without a warrant. So kudos to you for standing up for our civil liberty, Susan Collins, as it seems to be the Bush administration's priority to limit them down as much as possible. And a lot of Republicans are jumping on that bandwagon. So kudos to you for standing up for our civil rights. You know, one of the things you hear about in the news on and off, it comes on and off all the time, is about our education system and how it's failing and how it needs to be reformed. But, you know, there is something that nobody talks about when it comes to our education system, and that comes down to the individual student. I challenge everyone out there, go in to a high school, get some permission to go in and observe a classroom. Find a way that you can observe a classroom and watch the students. And I tell you, you will be amazed at how whiny and lazy the U.S. average student is. Okay? How in the world can you improve the achievement of students when the effort level is 50% of what they really could do, at most 75%, and perhaps in the very top you might get that 199% effort. But from what I see, the effort level of kids in high school is a fraction of what it could be and what it should be. It's because the kids got other things on their mind. The education isn't that big a deal to them. It's whatever it is. But why don't people talk about that? Because that is one major factor that's holding back the achievement of these kids. I just wish people would talk a little bit about more about the effort level of kids and have other people take a little responsibility here besides just putting it on the schools and how the schools suck and the teachers suck and all this and all that. Because it really, it's a societal problem here. A lot of it is beyond the control of the school. You know, you get going to an inner city school, and I remember when I was down in New York City, and we were walking outside of a school, and on the ground you could see, you know, those little crack vials all over the ground. I mean, let's look at the problem as it should be looked at. It is a societal problem. I mean, inner city schools, no matter how much money you shove in there, no matter how great you have, what a great teaching staff you have, you're not going to be able to win facing that kind of a situation. And plus, you know, you're not going to get the best teachers to go in there, because who would want to work in an environment like that? You could pay, you know, six-figure salaries and still not attract anyone willing to go in there and sort of battle it out in inner-city schools. But, you know, the responsibility, it has to be shared, you know. Society needs to take responsibility as well, not just place the blame on schools. I mean, you go to other countries, you know, even third world countries, education means something. Here, you know, it's, for some kids it means something. For a lot of kids it's like, well, you know, I don't really need it. I can go out, I can swing a hammer and still make a decent living, and you can in this country. You don't necessarily need to go to college. You can still make ends meet. And we've got such a great welfare system as well that, you know, it's just, there's a lot of families that are career for generations have been on welfare system. And the kids are brought up in that. And the kids have little desire to get beyond that system. And it becomes sort of, you know, a catch-22 situation. But let's face the real issue here. You know, it is partly a society problem. I'm being very politically incorrect. I realize that. To be someone who's, I'm not going to blame the schools for it all. Whereas everybody else in the media and everything, the president, everybody wants to blame the schools. But until we start addressing some of the reasons why kids are not performing the way they need to be, you have to look at the society. And on top of that, you know, our best schools are performing well beyond, you know, what a lot of countries around the world are getting for results. They're doing well. But it's just that certain schools and, you know, areas that are not doing well tend to drag down, you know, the total scores for everybody. So a system is not destroyed. And that's one of the problems. When you try to fix something that isn't necessarily completely broken, you can make it worse. And I think that's what No Child Left Behind is sort of doing. It's not really improving anything in this country. So that's my two cents worth. Well, that brings to a close another show. Thank you for listening today, and check back to my podcast, and maybe we'll have another episode up for you soon. Hopefully sooner than it took me to get this particular podcast out, which is, you know, a little dated, but I'll see what I can do.